my expertise is in D2C, and it's not because I'm not fascinated by retail. It's just not the lane that I went down. I did used to spend a lot of my time selling on Amazon, but I've also moved from that. And so my day is spent trying to get online sales, and then we support with our team all other channels.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we talk to executives and founders about what they uniquely see different when it comes to identifying top talent. If you are a first-time listener, we're so excited to have you. If you're a long-time listener, we always appreciate the support. Please, everybody, subscribe on Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And please give us some likes on there. So today, we are joined by a very special guest. We are joined by Ari Murray. She is the Chief Growth Officer at Sharma Brands and the creator at GoToMillions at Workweek. And I'm actually also very excited to say that she is the wife of Daniel Murray, who was on episode, I want to say 15 or 20 of the podcast. So this is the first time I'm bringing on a husband and wife combo in terms of guests. Ari, how the heck are you doing?
I'm good. It's hard to follow Daniel, but I'll try my best.
And oh, so you know what? That was so long ago. And I think the bar, you're going to surpass the bar and go way above it.
I hope he was tired during his.
He was tired. And he mentioned many times you were his better half. So we've got a high expectation here. You live in Austin, right?
We used to, but now we live in Miami.
You live in Miami? Whoa, yeah, I'm finding this out for the first time. It has been a few months since we last talked. When did you move to Miami? Yeah.
December. Makes sense.
How's it been?
Much better. Highly recommend to all involved.
Love that for you. Now we're going to have to figure out a time where we can go grab a drink after this, because I'm just up the street in Fort Lauderdale. I am very excited to hear that.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. And we're getting some beautiful weather right now. I was actually in New York all last week, and I thought I was excited to wear my sweaters and my peacoats and all that. I got to tell you, 2 days in, I was ready to come back to South Florida weather with the flip-flops and all that good stuff.
It's cute for just a little bit, and then it's time to go.
Only for a little bit. Get me back on that plane. All right, let's start here. So we talked about it a little bit earlier. Chief Growth Officer at Sharma Brands Marketing Agency. Tell us what the agency does, and then particularly what the Chief Growth Officer is responsible for.
Yeah, so we're a digital growth agency for D2C brands that are high scale. So think a brand that's coming to market with a celebrity and it's their first foray into selling beauty products. Or think a beauty brand that is really popular and they've hit a wall. Or think a protein bar brand that needs to grow by 2x. So they come to us and we can help in a lot of ways. And all the ways we can help are teams that are under my wings. So we can build you a website. We can run paid for you across social and search. We can do your emails. We can do all design. We can do branding. We can do CRO. And so I lead all those teams and also our developers and also our account team. So it's a busy job, but best place I've ever worked, for sure.
I love that. And one of the things that I've seen with marketing over the last 5 years, 10 years, so I feel like it's dramatically changed. The way that we consume content has changed. The rise of influencers, the rise of branding. I've got a 14-year-old, 11-year-old, and 10-year-old daughter. They're naming names of people I've never even heard of before. So just the way that we get content and buy things and brand understanding comes in such a different medium that a lot of the things that you brought up have been very traditional marketing things for many years now. I'm just interested, how have you all stayed out in front of that? How do you stay with everything changing all the time and AI coming into play? Like, what do you personally do as the Chief Growth Officer to make sure that Sharma's staying out in front of some of these different trends?
Yeah, I think we're in a great spot because I, in my past, when I was brand side, only accidentally worked at this really specific high growth celebrity brand where it was a Kardashian brand or it was Halsey or it was a really high scale juice company. And so I think what we do that's a bit different is just we have experience in this arena where if you launch a site update, you could piss off millions of shoppers. Or if you launch a product and you don't have the right marketing against it, you could accidentally have a couple millions of dollars of inventory on your hands that you forecasted incorrectly. And so I think what we do is just kind of bring a different level of experience. And our team is so smart, like our web designers are from Shopify and everyone is obsessed. And what I do, I think, is probably the most fun part of my job is I'm just consistently shopping. I'm consistently consuming. Like, this is my whole life. When I am done working, I then write about what I worked on. And then I will fall asleep by online shopping and tell Daniel it's for my work. And everything we do is because the 50 people that work here are like deeply obsessed. But we also use AI to our advantage. We use everything that's coming at us, and we're very excited for all the changes versus trying to stay in our old way. Everything we did last year, I already want to redo and I hate it. And I feel like that's a good way to not get left behind.
Stay out front. Funny you bring up Shopify. I was listening to a podcast with their CEO earlier today. Brilliant guy.
So smart.
Yeah, amazing organization. They're doing some crazy things. And you can understand why their culture is the way it is. Always starts at the top. I'm interested about how, we're going to talk about hiring, obviously. That's the theme of this podcast. But I'm fascinated how you personally got into this space. Was it always an interest in marketing for you? Was there a move? Was there a specific reason why you went direct consumer and e-commerce versus B2B? Did you fall into it, intentionally pursue it? I want to hear a little bit about the journey of how you got into this specific area.
My journey is a little wild, and I'd say it's very lucky, but a lot of bad luck hit me, which led me here. So I went to the University of Wisconsin for one semester, and there I was a retail major, but then I failed out. So that'll knock you down. I was a party girl. It was really fun, but I don't recommend it.
It's a great party school, by the way.
I was in the coolest sorority. It was really cute at the time. But then my parents like brought me home. I was able to transfer on my high school grades. Then I went to UCSB, which is another party school, but not all to be in a sorority, and didn't major in retail, was a religious studies major. Like, I was very by the book and got through. And then I went to law school, which I didn't complete. So again, my second string of bad luck. That one, it wasn't so much that I failed out. It was more that I just hated it and I knew it was the wrong thing for me. And so then I came back to LA very defeated, my two school dropouts, my religious studies degree, and I needed a job. And so I found a job at a company called Snack Nation that was a big B2B company, but had a very small e-commerce arm. And I didn't know what e-commerce was, but I knew that I could do customer service, which is just like writing to people and talking to people. And so I became... when I say this, I mean it deeply, like the lowest level employee at Snack Nation, a company of 300 people, and was their customer service admin. And it was in e-commerce. And so I, over time, realized I didn't want to be in customer service, but that I was so lucky to have been the person updating Shopify. And so I've been in this since 2017, but it was very much a fluke and I'm lucky.
Yeah, a couple of things you said there. Snack Nation, I am a customer. Our business uses Snack Nation. In fact, I was just eating some Quest chips earlier based coming off of our subscription. So very good. Now I'm going to let out something that I've never let out on this podcast. So this is a little bit of unique insight into me. I, too, went to a party school, the University of Arizona. I graduated. I always say it's the best 5 years of my life. Ended up with an okay GPA and graduating, but I certainly did not start that way. And I had to fight my way back. And little known fact about me, one of the things I think we really do a poor job of as a society is preparing high school students to go to college and make sure they're on a path, and you're spending a lot of money there and you should be very focused and intent. I didn't even meet my advisor until like my sophomore year. So I was a duck without a course, so to speak, that I did switch my major to retail for one semester. And I got to be honest with you, my motivation, I'm ashamed to say it right now, was that's where all the prettiest girls were. And yes, I was going to say my focus in college was way too much there. And so I did that for a semester, and then I got my head screwed on right and said, oh, wait a minute, you're spending a lot of money here. You better be a little more focused and intentional. Then I got set on my current path. But that is something I don't think I've ever brought up on the podcast.
That's a cool major. That's a rare major. And I think it's cool because that's what I always wanted to be. And then I like lost my course and then I found it back. But
what's funny
it's
is
a
that
good
like,
major.
Success is not a linear path, right? It's a lot of times it's circuitous. And many times you have to go through adversity and failure to get to where you go. I also was about to go to law school and applied to it, but ended up starting my corporate career. So a little more synergy there than I realized. So you developed this deep expertise in e-commerce marketing, particularly it sounds like Shopify has been a big part of that. What are some of the principles that differ from traditional brick and mortar brands? So a company of Target does both e-commerce, and obviously they have their brick and mortar storefronts. How do these marketing strategies overlap and play into each other? But then where do they also separate, where the two different sides of the houses have very different thoughts, skill sets, priorities?
So a lot of my brands are omnichannel, so they'll sell online in their D2C. They might also be on Amazon. They might be on a marketplace like Net-a-Porter or Kohl's.com or wherever it might be. And then they also might have their own storefronts or be available in person, like at a Target. And I think it's a lot of the same principles. The difference is that if you're a D2C first brand, where if the majority of your business relies on your online channel, the competition for attention and discovery is just so expensive. And there's different pressures, of course, if you're a retail only brand or if you're retail first or omnichannel first. But my expertise is in D2C, and it's not because I'm not fascinated by retail. It's just not the lane that I went down. I did used to spend a lot of my time selling on Amazon, but I've also moved from that. And so my day is spent trying to get online sales, and then we support with our team all other channels. So we know that what we ran on Meta is going to halo into Amazon. We know and often are going to make ads that speak to Ulta and have little shopping carts and trying to get people in store. But what we can track for sure is the D2C, at least where we focus and spend a lot of our time in the data. But I think it's really fun. Like, I used to sell into Costco, and that's something that I still love and do for a lot of my brands. And it's just, to be an expert at all would be phenomenal, but I would say I'm not. I'm really just chose my lane, and our agency has chosen its lane. So we have beautiful partners that we call on when our brand needs to run ads on Amazon or needs to launch a new store in person. And that's not us.
Yeah, listen, I'm definitely not as well-versed in marketing as you are, but something that comes to mind that you say is, when you're trying to win a new customer and help them understand the magnitude of what the marketing capability is, there's some that's very direct correlation, return on investment. And there's others that are byproducts, but that could be very big. It could mean everything. How do you help them understand that unquantifiable? Do you try to show metrics there? Do you try to show something unique or different, or tell stories? What is the way that you get them to understand the non-direct linear correlation to marketed here, brought them here, bought here, but how that could lead to different channels or different forms?
So I think it all adds up. So it's not that we can track every single initiative, or we could be talking about Snack Nation and then someone could go buy snacks or go buy Quest Chips because you just mentioned
Snack
Quest
Nation.
Chips.
If you want to throw some money our way because of the sponsorship, let me know. No, I'm just kidding.
Daniel's an alumni too, so that's how we met. But I would say it really is not all trackable, but what we can track, we track with deep like rigor. And I also know myself as a shopper, and how we just mentioned Snack Nation or Quest Chips, that a lot of it is impossible. So what matters most is like the return on your marketing spend and efforts. And so if you have a goal, and if you have backed into that goal with math and you believe in that goal, then you're responsible for that goal, even if some of your sales are unquantifiable. And so that's how we spend our time. And we have a lot of softwares and technologies that we call on. I have really smart people on my team that can model like in a way that you wouldn't be able to believe, but it's all like a summation of its parts. You can track retail in a way you can't track D2C and vice versa. And you also, though, on D2C, sometimes we're on a one-day click and we really have the pressure of today's spend needs to be measured and seen in store. And it's all just very exciting.
Fascinating stuff. So you also have this isn't a side gig, this is a full-time gig, a wildly successful newsletter with over 55,000 subscribers. I'm just interested, what was the aha moment to start it? And then what is the content and audience? Why do you think it's grown to the magnitude it has?
Yeah, I used to be really behind the scenes. And a lot of that was because of the nature of my work and NDAs and things that were intentionally not public. But now that I'm at an agency, I don't work for a brand who like has that type of requirement. So that's a big change. So before Go to Millions, I never posted anywhere. I never posted on Twitter. I never wrote a thing. I never kept a journal. I didn't really think of myself as someone who was entirely creative. But Daniel started to write and work on the Marketing Millennials, which is his media brand. It has a million followers on LinkedIn. It's a really big podcast. It's got 100,000 followers on his newsletter. He's the best. And I helped him with that behind the scenes along the way, just as a wife and as a fan and all the things you do when you're married. And then the opportunity came up to create my own brand that would be sort of my version in my world. So his is more marketing and broad, and he's from a B2B background. And mine is, I think, very much speaking to a different person, and not just a different person than Daniel's audience, but probably a different person than most of the D2C content that is out there. I'm very girly. I use exclamation marks. I have signature emojis and I shop. And that's the foundation of what I write. And I'm not someone who, if I'm honest, ingests a lot of content. I don't have a ton of time. And when I do have time, I'd rather do something that I find fun, watch Housewives or go do something that's not being productive.
I got tons of time.
I would love to talk Summer House. I feel really sad about Paige and Craig. But for me, I wrote something that I would find enjoyable to read, and it's taken off from there.
Wow. Listen, what a love story here. You guys are supporting each other, collaborating together, working together. I got to talk to my wife. She hasn't done anything like that for MSC. She's doing a big job. We got 4 kids. We got a big life at home. And my goodness, I love to hear that you're supporting each other. How awesome to work with somebody. Can I ask you something? Like, do you need time away because you work together?
No.
No,
and I think it's because we always work together that we don't really know any other way. And when we started working together, Daniel's 2 years older than me, and he taught me what a VLOOKUP is, and I really needed to know, and he just snuck and taught me on the side. And I think we're just used to helping each other, and it's very much like what we talk about. And I don't even know if I wish, but when we're at dinner, we're like gonna talk about what we have to do that day, and wow, it's okay.
You guys are cute. I love that. All right, what about if somebody wanted to start a newsletter? Do you got any advice for them? Hey, listen, if you want to get to an X amount of subscribers, do this. Or do you have any hacks or anything like that? What would you say to somebody?
I would say write for yourself, because it's really easy, especially now with AI, to copy something else and to put your spin on it. And I think that can be super successful. But if you're not able to write what you're putting out, at least in the beginning, from experience, not from research, I think you're going to have a hard time standing out. Because when I sit down to write Go to Millions, I don't look up what I'm about to talk about. I speak about something that happened that day or that month or that I saw. And I feel like that works because I'm interested in what I do. So I don't really have advice. I think, to be honest, I'm lucky that this has happened to me. And I don't think my newsletter is better than anyone else's. I think I've stuck the course, whichever. And I've also been writing not to be successful, but because I think it's interesting and cool. And I think that you don't need to set out to have a specific amount of followers. And also, what a bogus way to grow, because we could all light up a Meta campaign with unlimited budget and grow to the moon. But what matters is who's on your list and who's writing you back, and if you'd actually want to know those people. And I'm really happy with who I get to meet through Go to Millions.
That's awesome. That's been my philosophy on LinkedIn. It's not about necessarily having this many followers, but the followers I have and the ones I interact with and what comes of those relationships.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think you said that stuck things out to me is, especially in the age of AI, I think some of the things like authenticity, taste, but even like the small things like that we do as a human being in terms of, yeah, being on time, firm handshake, like some of the stuff that our parents are telling us that we should be doing since a young age. I think those are the things that are going to really start to stand out again as we get more into an automated world and you really don't always trust the source of what you're getting. I think writing for yourself and that authenticity is such a key and really good advice. So I love that. I appreciate that. I want to talk hiring, because I know you've probably done a lot of it throughout your career. You've got an agency, obviously, where you have a pretty big team, it sounds like. I'd like to start here. When you're hiring for Sharma, do you have a core hiring philosophy of what you're looking for or an approach you take when you go into it?
Not necessarily a core philosophy. I would say I want to hire someone that I want to know and want to work with. And I also think, because I work for a client-facing industry, you want to make sure that you're hiring someone who, like, you can tell really wants this job and really wants to be there and really is prepared for this meeting and comes on time and is just dependable from the beginning. Because if you can't make the interview, or if you can't show up to the interview in a way that I could like put you or imagine you in front of our beautiful clients, then I'm nervous and that's not where you want to be. But a lot of what we do and a lot of who we hire is based off of referral and people that we know, which has helped us to have a really strong culture. And now that there's new hiring managers and people that are hiring to build out their teams, it's really about making sure like you could really picture yourself working closely as a friend with the person that you're about to hire.
I really like that.
Often we'll choose the candidate that
you can see yourself taking a car
was, like,
ride with.
Bad,
right?
Yeah, was like there was just more of a flow, and I feel like life's hard enough and work is definitely hard enough where like you can't force it.
Yeah, it's got to be somebody that you could see yourself spending time with that brings something to the table. I love that.
Totally.
Would it be fair to say that maybe something that isn't exactly exciting for you to interview is somebody that comes in maybe non-prepared or not showing understanding of the company or the role or just lack of energy and engagement? Are those just major turnoffs in an interview for you?
100%. And I also feel like lack of energy is where I like can't stand for, because I just find it so uncomfortable. And so if you can't describe your own career or what you understand, or if you're doing a live audit for us as the interview, and if you're not moving quickly and like you can tell that they just spend their time like trying to get a second back, and you can tell they're not excited about the thing that we're going to do versus a lot of people want the job. And I know it's an especially hard job market, but if you're not equally excited about the like details of the job versus working for Nick, who's my boss, who's so well known and so amazing, or working with my beautiful team, that's part of it. But you have to also be like equally enthused by the hard questions of the job.
I really like that. What about a memorable interview experience? Maybe it was one where you were interviewing for a job, or maybe it's somebody that you were interviewing for the current company. You don't got to name names, but maybe it was a really great interview, or maybe it was a really not great interview. And by the way, you mentioned the energy. I'm going to have a real quick sip of coffee. Not that I've ever been accused of not having energy, but I just want to make sure I live up to the expectation of my guests.
It's 3:27 p.m. That's risky right there.
You're in Miami now. Cuban coffee doesn't stop serving until 4:30.
I could never. I'd say my favorite interview is for someone who cold emailed Nick, who's my boss, and she dropped in that email on a Saturday night just so many facts about him, so many facts about me, so many facts about Sharma Brands. He forwarded it to me, and then within 2 days, we were on a call with her. And I don't even remember how it happened, but within 2 minutes, he's texting me and I'm texting him at the same time, like, she's the one. And then she starts to tell us all about her company that she started, where it's a sustainable fashion line. And she's just clearly done e-commerce for herself while she also had a full-time job. And I just think it's so exciting. Someone like takes the initiative to write a beautiful cold email, which is already scary. And then they kill the interview and are a light from the second you meet them. And then they start to talk, and everything that's not on their resume is the most applicable thing about them. Because if you have your own e-commerce store, then you can sell things at our agency and really understand where our clients have been. Because imagine that pressure. And I don't have it in me to start my own e-commerce store. So it's just pretty inspiring when you can find a stranger on the internet. And she's now been with us for almost 2 years, been promoted many times, has a team, is the same person every day. Her store is doing amazing and she does both. And I just think sometimes you're just like lucky someone came across your desk.
Best hire you ever made?
It's tough because they all are the best. She's the most instant, like, exactly who you'd think, but I can't pick.
No, we don't want to make anybody feel bad, but it sounds like I could just tell by the way you were smiling and talking about it that this is somebody that's made a big impression on you, and that
I'm very
better. I've had great interviews that didn't turn out to be great hires. So the fact that it validated was good.
Oh, I have too. Sometimes people are good, but no, she's better than
that. Necessarily what you need professionally. I think you said something that was really interesting is that I always tell people the resume is 10% of the story, right? That's usually what gets you in the door, but ultimately the story outside of the resume was what makes you a great person to work with, team member, employee, whatever, however you want to call it. So the fact that you found out things about her that just can, it was impressive enough that she wrote those things and showed the research and the desire and the willingness. But the fact that the things you found out after the fact made it even more of a fit, I think really is awesome, stands out. Do you have a favorite question you like to ask in interviews? Something that is like a go-to that you find you get great insights out of?
Not necessarily a favorite question. I think it's really helpful to ask, depending on the job, in the first interview, a very detailed question that only you would know if you're currently hands on keyboard. Let's pretend it's that type of a role. Because to your point where like you can be an amazing interviewer, I think the culture fit and the resume, all that matter, but I'd rather ask like a specific question about, are they testing it as an ABO or CBO right now, and have them explain to me why. Because you'd be shocked for a director of paid media, JD, how many people will come across your desk and make the first interview who don't know what those things are. And it's just, I'd rather get that out of the way in the first moment versus 2 vibe check interviews, then an audit where we find out that we crash and burn. I'd rather save everyone and also save my team, because people get really excited and you don't want to clear someone into the second interview that probably just, you know, better not to move forward. So just something very detailed.
I see it all the time, like the funnel starts, and it's funny because, you know, the people that even get to the resume because they have something on their resume that stands out as seeing as a fit, you have to comb through 900 sandwich artists or people who are completely not relevant, because people will just apply for anything, right? So you have to comb through level and then hopefully find somebody that as you go down that funnel gets to be the right fit for the role. Sometimes you get surprised and sometimes you don't. And that's why hiring can be frustrating, is that so it feels like you have to use the analogy, kiss a lot of frogs, maybe find your prince or princess. So that's part of it.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
I want to ask you something a little bit unique and different. So we thought, you mentioned earlier about, you know, there's a lot of great people out there on the market right now. I'm interested in any marketing principles or advice that you might give to somebody who's on the market, who's looking for a job, maybe their first time out on the market in a while, or just, is there anything like from a marketing lens? Because at the end of the day, I look at recruitment a lot as marketing, right? Both as you go to market and market your company and the role and then market the person back to your organization. What advice would you give somebody who's out there right now? Maybe put a little bit of a marketing spin behind it.
I have two things. So on my LinkedIn, when I had 200 people following me, I must have been like 2018, I put that Shopify Plus is my middle name as like my little description of myself. And that, when I was on the market back then, I would get recruiters probably keyword searching Shopify Plus, or that would be how people would reach out to me. And I think writing that on LinkedIn many years ago and leaving it there forever, I think if you are in e-commerce and you know the difference between Shopify and Shopify Plus, you know, that means you work with the biggest stores. I think that it's like really served me. And now software vendors will still write me like, oh, Ari, I heard you like Shopify. And like, it's still,
you created
sometimes
a brand. That's a brilliant.
Yeah. And I didn't do it on purpose, but it is like truly the thing I knew best when I sat down to write. Instead of writing this flowery, like 7-paragraph thing about myself when I had 2 years experience and I didn't have that much to write, sometimes you can't compete. And so you should just write the thing and be known for it. And the second thing I'd say is I do see a lot of resumes now and they've gotten so fancy. And I would say that kind of isn't my approach, or wasn't my approach. I haven't had a new job in 3.5 years, but my resume is a PDF. It's in Times New Roman. It's one page and it leads with the technology that I use in my stack. And I think that if you're applying to work in a technical marketing role, you don't need it designed out in Figma and pink. And, you know, it shouldn't be 2 pages. I don't care if you like ChatGPT and ask if it's allowed to be longer. To me, like, you should be able to summarize what you do and what you know. And I think sometimes length is meant to distract and the colors are meant to distract. And I remember having to play with the margins of my resume, and it's so packed and it's in 11px, and I really had to try so hard to fit it. But I think it's like respectful to keep it dense and to not try to be wordy when you're trying to stand out. And I think you can't design your way out of what it says.
Wow, that is brilliant advice. I wouldn't be honest. I don't want to generalize, but I didn't know that would be where you go with that. You're saying simpler is better and actually a way to stand out. And maybe if you're doing those other things, it's because you're not trying to, you're not hiding something else. But at the end of the day, like, sometimes it's just about the meat and potatoes of what you do.
Totally. And like, I've hired many people whose resumes are fancy, but when I see one that has the right words on it and it's black and white, I like smile in my old self. Oh, like, this is what I would do too. Yeah.
What's interesting is somebody that's looked at, I don't know, 100,000 plus resumes in my life, if not more. I would agree with you. I think when people say one page, I think that can be a little bit limiting, but I would not go over 2 pages, because I do think that if you're not able to be concise and be able to exemplify what you've done, and I've worked with some executives where I'm like, I think it's okay to stretch to 2 pages. I think somewhere.
Yeah, maybe.
But at the end of the day, like, maybe drawing a cutoff line at a certain point and showing the most relevant information. We probably don't need to know about your job at the bagel shop as a manager back in when you were 22. Lord knows that if I actually created a resume of every job I've ever had, it'd probably be about 10 pages just because I've worked on a bunch of different places and done a bunch of different things until I'm in the job I've been in now for 15 years. To your point,
you're
on that route until you get to where you're trying to go. Love it. That's awesome. Really good advice. I'm going to repeat it again for candidates who are out there listening. Create a bit of a professional brand. Put yourself out there on LinkedIn, what you want, what you're an expert at, what you want to be known for. That'll come up in keyword searches and could be a really big deal for you. And then simpler is better with your resume. Make sure to keep it somewhat dense. Talk about your tech stack up front and that not always what glitters is gold. Fair? Love. Okay, I got some follow-ups and then we're going to go to our speed round, okay? So first follow-up I have, is there something you're working on right now or a client that you're working with right now that you're just really juiced about, really excited about? You can tell us.
Yeah, so I'm working with a beauty brand that's launching in March. And it's pretty fascinating because it's a celebrity beauty brand and it's a TikToker. And it's just amazing to see like how someone who's got like amazing social presence approaches their channel. And it's very exciting because I've worked with so many brands across so many sectors and so many different celebrities, but you don't usually meet them and they're not usually there to have opinions directly with their agency. And it's really cool to see involvement. And I feel like it's refreshing to see someone can own their brand. And I'm also working on a protein bar brand that's blowing up. And it's just, there's a lot of really cool momentum. And it feels sometimes like D2C has a cloud. There's a tariff news or there's CPMs are on the rise or Black Friday doesn't comp to last year. And sometimes you forget that you can spin up a brand out of nothing and it can just succeed. And it's really inspired, but not always that way. But I feel
like... Is it fair to say that a lot of the people that you work with are going to be more likely to be in Miami than, say, Austin? Is that...
Oh, that's tough. Actually, no. I feel like I have more clients in Austin, but most of our clients are in New York or LA.
You're right.
I feel like that's where still the brands are, but... Yep. Even there, all the teams are all spread out. I feel like very few have in-office roles. And the ones that do are pretty powerful and big, but mostly everyone just hires the best they can find.
Love that. What about a good book? Or if you want to give me content that you maybe seen or anything you want to recommend for our listeners that you've been really excited about that you want to share?
Oh, a good book.
It could be a good show, a good movie too.
Okay, let me do a good show. I would say... I am a big fan of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I feel like it's very juicy down to the reunion, and that's working out really well.
I have not seen the recent episodes, but I am not afraid to tell you that my wife had me watching like the first few seasons, and then I'm familiar. I know the one lady got arrested, I think, for some sort of like tax evasion or something like that. And yeah, they are heavy on the drama out there in Salt Lake. And I have some friends from Salt Lake, and they are not a lot like the ladies I seen on that show. So that was a very interesting look into that.
I feel like... world. That is a great rec, but I also, on like the business side, I do listen to All In every week, and it's how I nerd out and learn about things I don't understand. So that's my favorite.
I listen to All In
podcast.
Pretty religiously myself. I don't always agree with everything they say, but I learn
no,
a lot.
Me either.
I love it when they talk technology, business, and all that good stuff. Yeah, I listen to that. I think it's a really good long format. They play off each other pretty well. And certainly you learn a lot. So there's, again, there's things I like, there's things I don't agree with, but I always learn. And that's what I'm looking for with content. So big All In fan. The Travis Kalanick, I think, was on recently, the founder of Uber. And he was talking about constructions that he's doing. So good episodes. Maybe we'll get J. Cal on here at some point. We'll see.
I hope so for you.
Last question before we get to the speed round, because we're doing a speed round. I want to know if you had some advice to give 20-year-old Ari that you didn't know then, but that you know now, what would it be?
So this is crazy advice, but I think when I found my first job and I loved it, I told Daniel, I want to work here forever, like 5 years. Like, this is for me. And Daniel had a different philosophy and he left before me, and I was so sad, but he just started to grow so quickly and his career really took off. And I think that it's best to keep it moving in the beginning of your career. And I was an e-commerce manager across 4 different companies over the course of not 4 years. And so I think that I would get stolen or I would leave for $5,000. And I don't think that's probably like textbook advice, but it really helped me to learn. And when you go for that next job that you really want, if they need specific experience, you aren't going to usually get that really sick job that everyone's gunning for if you have experience at one place. And I think that kind of moving around and maybe being a job hopper really taught me so much. And I also sometimes made very like incorrect moves, and I'd go to a company and the culture would be bad and I'd cry and hate it and should have stayed. But I think you got to take a lot of risks. And now I'm plopped down and I've been here and I'm growing where I'm working, but I think if I hadn't seen so much before, I would have really struggled.
What a juxtaposition of advice there. I actually really like the line of logic that you have there. I do think early on in your career, I joke around that I dated a lot in college. Remember, I did retail for a semester. But then when I met my wife, I knew what I was looking for. And I think the same thing can go in your career, especially early on, being in different environments, having different managers, seeing different cultures, having different objectives, different industries. To your point, right, really sets you up for whatever that long-term situation is, if you want that long-term situation. And I think, you know, it's a different way of looking at a hopper, because I can tell you every day I hear from somebody saying, wow, I don't know about this person. They've had 3 jobs in 4 years. Sometimes that can be a benefit. And then to your point, I do think for the really desirable jobs, seeing a bunch of brand names on a company, that not just this company took a risk on them, but multiple companies took a risk on them, can be a really powerful thing. So I think that's really good advice. And I would say that early on in your career, trying and learning and figuring out what you're about will only help you later on in your career as you maybe settle down a little bit more. All right, let's go to our speed round. You have no idea what's coming here, but I'm just going to ask you questions that curiosity kills the cat. I'm interested to hear what your take on them is. And there's some things that we talked about in this conversation. So the first one I have is, if you had a product that you could have any influencer rep for you, who would it be?
Ooh, that's so crazy. Maybe Elsa Hosk, because I follow her and buy everything. I can't afford it, but I watch everything she buys and I buy what I can. And maybe I would have her rep my new faux fur line.
Yeah, is it because she has a huge following, or the way that just the way she brands
herself? She has a big following, but she has a cult following, and it's very dialed into this shopper who will buy whatever she says. And so I think I'd rather, instead of, you know, going for the most famous person with the most followers, I'd rather have someone with a bit of a niche that can spend a lot of money, and her followers can spend a lot of money. Wish I had her purse addiction is really beautiful.
Purse addiction, I love that. So I'm going to sound like a total 43-year-old right now, but I'm going to bring up Mr. Beast, just because the Beast Games, my kids have been watching, I've been watching with them. I'm interested, what do you think are some of the keys to his success, why he's had the growth he has? Obviously, he's put a lot of time into it, but is there any specific things he does in his YouTube or anything that really make him stand out?
Yeah. I worked on Feastables, which is his candy bar line, and I launched it. Wow. I was part of the team that launched it. I took the password off of the Shopify store that day. But he is just so entertaining. And I think that's the key, and so consistent. And also, I know he's been plagued with some little scandals throughout the times.
And he's mostly pretty simple. Mostly that
he's beloved. Really, yeah. Cool. And people say he is who he says he is. And I think that's so interesting. And I follow a lot of influencers, and one of them right now just got canceled for being mean to her employees. And I can't even buy any. I have so many things from her, and like, I can't even look at my stuff. And so I feel like for Mr. Beast, like, I think there's not a lot of skeletons, and he's so entertaining and doing things really differently. And then for anyone else, like, you'd want to pick that influencer that's like pretty squeaky clean.
Yeah. If you had those skeletons, we would have found out by now, because when you get to that level of fame and money,
they'll try.
No level of people trying to bring you down. I think it's interesting that he's talked about buying TikTok and things like that. So I think there's some more interesting things to come there. I got to say, he does a good job with the cliffhanger every episode. It has my kids excited, and I'm like pretending to be like a nonchalant dad, but I'm really into it. And I'm like, oh man, who's going to win this? Yeah, so totally have to admit that. All right, what about somebody who's on their way up in the space, right, in terms of influencers, somebody that maybe you want to give a little recognition to or that you're excited about?
So there's an influencer, her name is Brett Chody, and she's a runner. She was like in the Boston Marathon, I think she was, or the New York Marathon. She was the second tracked runner, and she's got 70,000 followers on Instagram. And people, again, like, if you love her, and she has nothing in common with me at all. She's 23 and a runner, and I'm 30 and I don't move. But I think she's fascinating. Like, on Instagram, she'll post 100 stories a day, and it's basically a vlog of her life. And I just think it's really interesting and cool, and I want to watch that vlog every day. And I think she's cool, but I think she doesn't need any help. I think the people that love her, one of my coworkers is in New York and just went to her run club that she came and did in New York and was shaking when she went and met her, because you just, if you love her. So I think she's going to be a thing.
Okay, you brought up Paige earlier. My wife loves Paige. If you could ask Paige any question, what would it be? She made me go to the Giggly Squad podcast in Miami pretty recently, so I went and saw that. So if you were going to ask Paige something directly, Paige DeSorbo, what would it be?
Ooh, I would love to know how often she does her makeup herself versus gets it done, because her makeup was always perfect. And then I'd like to have the routine. So probably not a very strategic question.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to go on a limb. Yeah. Everything I've seen, I'm guessing she doesn't do it herself at all. In fact, I think there were many jokes about her bringing her crew with her, entourage with her everywhere she goes.
But like on summer house, she always looks good. And what, does she sneak it in before camera?
I mean, they pretend like they come with one bag for that weekend. And I'm like, no chance. There's multiple carry-on bags. What's something you miss about Austin?
There's a place called Veracruz, and it has the most amazing tacos of the whole entire life.
Veracruz.
Breakfast tacos, and there's a green salsa there, and they never bring enough when you order on delivery. So I always order like the $6 salsa that's like a quart, and I throw it away. But it's like my favorite salsa in the world.
I love that. I'm a big Chipotle hot salsa guy. I will do the same thing. I'll usually get an extra one. I try to eat as clean as possible. The one thing that I cheat on sometimes every weekend once in a while is I'll get Taco Bell late at night. And I also have the hot sauce and the Diablo sauce in my house. Like I don't, because you know what? They always mess up on getting my hot sauce packets there on Uber Eats. So
you
I
don't
just
trust it.
Can't go without.
Yeah.
All right. Last question.
Taco Bell is amazing.
Hey, listen, it's got a place in the top. What's the best food you've had in Miami so far? Maybe best restaurant or best food?
So I would say El Bagel, because it is really the best bagel that I've ever had outside of New York. So El Bagel.
In Miami? El Bagel.
Yeah.
Where's that?
There's one in Coconut Grove, and there's one like on Miami Beach somewhere. But El Bagel and the everything bagel with like eggs and cheese.
Okay. I'm a big bagel guy. In New York, I had multiple bagels thinking I couldn't get anything out here in South Florida. It sounds like I just need to go down to Coconut Grove. All right. Yeah. You've been amazing. I appreciate you coming
on.
I'm so glad I could have Daniel on. And now you, I don't know if there's any offspring, brothers and sisters, any other family members we want to get lined up.
We have siblings. We can introduce.
Let's figure it out. Let's bring it a family affair. I'm actually really pumped that you guys are in South Florida now. So we'll get together. We'll grab a drink very soon. I'll get with Daniel on that. Thanks for coming on.